Hello and welcome to In Conversation With, a podcast from the Lancet Infectious Diseases. It's October 2021 and I'm Jonathan Blott. This month, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Laura Cooper from Imperial College London and Dr. Samuel Okiroh from the WHO Regional Office for Africa in the Congo. Dr. Cooper and Dr. Okiroh's new research investigates the various risk factors for the spread of vaccine-derived type 2 poliovirus in Africa, and is published online this month. Laura, perhaps you could begin by describing how vaccines for poliovirus have changed in recent years.
Sure. So there's two main types of polio vaccine. There's oral polio vaccine, which is sometimes called OPV for short, and there's inactivated polio vaccine, which is sometimes called IPV. An oral polio vaccine, it's a live attenuated or a weakened virus that's given by mouth. And so it has some advantages, which is primarily that it's inexpensive and easy to administer. And it also, really importantly, gives transmission-blocking immunity. But it also has a big disadvantage, which is that in places with low population immunity or high fecal-oral transmission rates, it can transmit within populations and acquire mutations to evolve back to a virulent state. And that's what we call a vaccine-derived poliovirus. And that can cause paralysis just like a wild poliovirus. And so in order to eradicate polio entirely, we have to stop using oral poliovirus vaccine. And so in 2015, the eradication of type 2 wild poliovirus was certified. And so the world took the first step towards withdrawing all OPV by withdrawing just type 2 OPV. And so all countries that were using OPV switched from using trivalent OPV, which has types 1, 2, and 3 in it, to using bivalent OPV, which just has types 1 and 3. And then at the same time, there was a recommendation for countries to start using inactivated polio vaccine in order to give children protection if there ever were to be an outbreak of type 2 poliovirus. So these type 2 vaccine-derived polioviruses unfortunately continued to circulate. And it was really important to stop transmission of these viruses to secure polio eradication. And so what was used to respond to these outbreaks was a type of oral poliovirus that would give that transmission blocking immunity that only contained type 2 attenuated vaccine. And that's called monovalent OPV2, sometimes MOPV2 for short. But as I sort of explained a bit earlier, when you have this live virus and you have a situation with low immunity and high transmissibility, then you get these vaccine-derived polioviruses. So the eradication initiative was stuck in a kind of cycle by which the tool that we had to stop the outbreaks was actually causing more outbreaks. And so luckily, there's a novel vaccine that's called novel OPV2 that's been in development. And it has all the same advantages of regular oral poliovirus vaccine, but it also is more genetically stable, and so it's less likely to evolve back into this virulent form. And so that vaccine got emergency use licensure in November of last year, 2020. And it's it was first used in Nigeria in March of this year, 2021. So those are the main big developments in the world of poliovirus vaccines in the last 5 or 6 years.
And Sam, please could you expand on this effect that the spread of circulating vaccine-derived type 2 poliovirus is having on efforts to eradicate polio in Africa?
Taking on from what my colleague Laura has explained, fortunately, we now know that in the African region, we have eradicated the wild type of polio viruses. But we have a very big challenge now with the vaccine-derived poliovirus. As initially mentioned by my colleague Laura, this is coming out of the complication of using oral polio vaccine and in low immunity communities. So the challenge we have now is that we need to use oral polio vaccine to actually stop the vaccine-derived poliovirus. And this is a catch-20 situation. So the context in which we are working is such that there is low immunity in a number of these communities. And so when you use oral polio vaccine, especially the trivalent, the monovalent type 2, you still find that there is a possibility of evolution or if not emergence of new vaccine-derived polioviruses. And this is a complication that at the moment we are trying to sort out by using the novel oral polio vaccine, which has just come into effect. And Laura had already explained that.
So in light of all these challenges that you've both described, Laura, if you could just describe what the main aims of your analysis were.
Yeah, sure. But I wonder if first, Sam, you might want to just update us on the countries that have reported polio cases this year and also what the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic have been.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that as quickly as possible. So far in 2021, we've had 15 countries that have reported cases of polio virus, vaccine-derived poliovirus. And this is exclusive from the ones which are picked up from the environment. So polio cases are reported in 15 countries. 12 of them are in the African region, and two are in EMRO, the other one is in the Sierra WHO region. And most of these viruses that have been reported this year actually come from Nigeria, with 152 so far. And that is still going. It is just the middle of the year, past the middle of the year. And also Afghanistan has reported 42. Of course, Afghanistan is outside our own region. Regarding the effect of COVID-19 pandemic on vaccination programs, it has actually had a devastating effect on the vaccination programs. And I'll just name maybe only five of them here to set the scene. The first and most important thing was that COVID caused a complete pause of outbreak response activities. So at that time, there was no possibility of responding to any virus outbreak arising from the concern that maybe if we continue with the house-to-house, which is our desired strategy, we shall be encouraging the spread of COVID. So there was a stoppage of all the immunizations for most of 2020. Our program also hinges on stool samples collection to be used to detect viruses in which are circulating. This activity also stopped because shipping of samples could not happen without the flights that are usually interconnecting from country to country to take the stool specimen from one lab to another. So the processing was also delayed completely and only resumed early this year. Over and above that, there was also delay in delivery of the oral polio vaccine, which was to be used for response. But worse still, there was also delay in production because there is only one manufacturer based in Singapore, and the devastating effect of COVID actually resulted in the factory working at minimal capacity. Over and above that, also the increase in the number of refusals to take the oral polio vaccine, because the communities started confusing the oral polio vaccine with the COVID vaccine, which they didn't initially accept. And finally, because of the fact that the staff who are going out in the field have got to be protected, we now have an added cost to provide them with the PPE so that they can be protected. So those are some of the effects of COVID-19 on the vaccination program.
So, yeah, quite a substantial growing burden, and of course severely affected by the pandemic, like so many aspects of healthcare at the moment. So if we could just come back to the main aims of your study.
Yeah, sure. So we had three main aims. The first was to estimate the vaccination coverage and population immunity from 2015, so before the withdrawal of type 2 OPV in routine immunization, up until 2020. And we wanted to do this at a subnational level across the African continent, because this was the place where the vaccine-derived polioviruses were spreading most widely. The second thing we wanted to do was to measure the impact of that immunity on vaccine-derived poliovirus risk and look at how that risk changed over time. And then third, we wanted to compare that modeled risk with the location and timing of actual outbreak response campaigns to try and see whether the eradication initiative have been fast enough to respond to outbreaks and whether they've been targeting the right areas with their responses.
So then going into some of your main findings, how has immunity from the different vaccine types changed over the years that you studied? And what do your findings mean in terms of these vaccination campaigns?
As was expected, immunity from OPV has declined substantially. So before withdrawal, immunity was sort of between 80 and 90%. And now, in the first half of 2020, on average, only 27% of children under five have OPV immunity against type 2. The other thing that we found, because we were looking subnationally, was that there's quite a lot of variation in the level of OPV immunity now. So places that have done outbreak response campaigns have very high immunity, and other places that haven't done campaigns and haven't had outbreaks have low or no immunity at all from OPV. At the same time, IPV immunity increased from less than 1% of children to about 33% of children. But this is still not even really a majority of children, and that leaves a really large number of children without any protection against these vaccine-derived polioviruses, which are spreading. Because there's fewer children with this OPV immunity, which is the transmission-blocking immunity, vaccine-derived polioviruses can spread faster and cause more cases than before. And although we found that IPV does have a significant effect in terms of reducing incidence of cases, it's still too low to protect all the children from polio. And so we found that the eradication initiative on the whole has been responding too slowly or in areas that have been too limited geographically to stop the spread of these vaccine-derived polioviruses. And some of this is due to really unavoidable challenges that my colleague Sam referred to before. But overall, we found that of about 300 million children at risk, about 11% were living in places that received a vaccine response within 6 months, so in a sort of a timely manner. And about 45% received a response, but within 7 to 12 months, so maybe a bit late. And then another 44% received a response after 12 months, or maybe not at all. So the main takeaway is that we need to respond faster, or if there are these inevitable delays, we need to target broader geographical areas, taking into account these risk factors and taking into account that the virus is going to spread while we are unable to respond.
So then finally, going forward, Sam, how will efforts to eradicate polio look in the future? And what are some of the key considerations for future vaccine campaigns and outbreak responses?
Yes, again, during these crafting of this paper, we also touched on this particular important question on the future of polio eradication. And we came up with quite a few possible solutions. The first one is that we need to use the novel OPV2 more and replace it with the monovalent oral polio vaccine type 2, because the novel oral polio vaccine 2 is known from studies not to again cause a further emergence of vaccine-derived polioviruses. So that is the first step. We need to be able to replace the monovalent oral polio vaccine type 2 with the novel oral polio vaccine type 2. Research is ongoing, and I think it is very close to a breakthrough, where we shall also have novel oral polio vaccine type 1 and novel oral polio vaccine type 3, because what we have now is only type 2. So if we have all those three, then it means that we shall have reduced the risk of further transmission across the board. So if we get to that situation, we will then have the option of using novel oral polio vaccine type 1, type 2, and type 3. And we believe that from the available evidence so far, all these novel oral polio vaccines will be able to protect children from getting further transmission. Going to the key considerations for future vaccine campaigns and outbreak response, I will probably talk about four main areas here. The first one is for us to be able to address the geographical scope of how far we cover. My colleague Laura had said earlier on that we have actually been responding very small and allowing the vaccine-derived poliovirus to run ahead of us. So every time we respond in an area, we pick up cases again in another area which is just adjacent. So the first thing is to try to make sure that the scope is as wide as possible, and it should be derived from analyzing the existing population immunity, and then also looking at what the likelihood of the movement of people, that's travel, who actually carry the virus along, is included in the analysis to come up with the scope. The second and very important aspect of this is the timeliness. We need to always do things faster and probably better, because as much as possible, if we delay, the virus doesn't wait for us. And also it can cross from one country to the other. And we always say that the virus does not need a visa to move across the borders. So it just crosses and moves with people. So timeliness is a very important aspect together with the scope. Thirdly, we have the vaccine choice. I've just outlined the fact that we have novel OPV1, 2, and 3, with 1 and 3 coming into play very soon. So again, from here, if we have those vaccines, they will probably be the vaccine of choice. But if these ones are not there, then we'll have to continue to use monovalent oral polio vaccine type 2, but ensure that we have a very high quality round so that we do not miss any children and allow transmission to continue. But also in the absence of the novel oral polio vaccines, we shall have to use trivalent oral polio vaccine where type 1 is still being detected. If this does not help us and we can get more of the MOPV2, then we can use that as well once they have circulating vaccine-derived poliovirus. Finally, we need to strengthen routine immunization services. We know very well that routine immunization alone will not be able to stop transmission, but by adding inactivated polio vaccine into the bodies of the children, we also protect them better from paralysis. So those are the four main areas that we expect to be able to apply for the future of our immunization program.
Dr. Cooper and Dr. Akira, thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much too.
You can read Dr. Cooper and Dr. Akira's research online at thelancet.com. Thank you to my guests, and thank you for listening to this episode of In Conversation With. Remember, you can subscribe to In Conversation With The Lancet Infectious Diseases wherever you usually get your podcasts.